Yes, sir.
New business. Short-term rentals, presentation of data. And quite an interesting title for your position, Mr. Chief of Housing Tools.
Oh, I didn't know that was my title.
James
actually.
Cole. Well, it's on your name deal, okay. And it's listed in here. And I've got to ask, what is the Department of Housing Tools?
Oh, well, that's the name of our firm, is Housing Tools.
Okay.
I'm the principal of Housing Tools, but
okay.
I don't know about chief of whatever.
Okay. So Housing Tools is an entity.
Yes.
Not a department.
No.
Mr.
We're
Cole?
A consultant for the county.
Okay.
The
Mr. Cole, the floor is yours.
You ready?
All right.
Hold on. Mr.
So,
Hart.
So you're under contract working for the planning department?
Yes. We have a contract with the planning department of Siskiyou County. We're updating the housing element, and then as part of that contract, we've also been asked to do this vacation rental analysis.
And if I could just interject really quickly, Haley Lang, Director of Planning. So as Mr. Cole stated, he is a contractor working with us updating our housing element, right, which we are required to update every 8 years. It's a super fun process. But in addition to that, we also contracted with Housing Tools to conduct the short-term rental analysis to provide the Planning Commission and the Board with information on, you know, what's going on within the county related to short-term rentals. As you are aware, there is that moratorium that we have in place currently with the 2.5 acres or smaller for short-term rentals. So this, the process for this today, we're just going to be presenting you all with the information from that draft analysis report, which is contained in your staff report package. Then we'll be coming back in October for formal recommendation from you all based on the recommendations that are contained in the draft analysis, and then we will be taking that to the board to see how the county will like to handle short-term rentals in the future, and you know, should they want to modify the moratorium or something like that. So that is high level what the process is for that.
So is this update part of a bigger process to update the entire general plan, or is that a whole different process?
It's a whole different process. So we're required every 8 years right. to update the housing element, and it's just coincidence, I guess, that we are also updating the land. So we will be updating the land use element of the general plan. So that is a totally separate process, and there's separate legislation and requirements related to that. So the housing element is a part of a county general plan, but it's a totally separate process. And there's separate requirements that need to take place.
When you go to completing the general plan update, this will just be folded in on top of it?
Correct.
You don't have to go back and redo it again?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
We'll be redoing it again. About the time it's completed, we'll
yes.
be starting the process all over.
There's no decision. There'll
yeah.
be no decision made.
No decision today, but there's just a lot of technical information.
Okay.
So just wanting you all to kind of digest that.
And when it comes to the vacation rental ordinance, it really doesn't make any difference what we think. It's going to the Board of Supervisors, and they'll make the decision. So we will make a recommendation, and they'll do what they want. So. I don't think we could need to put a lot of time in stock. They're going to do what they want to do, regardless of our decision.
They're going to take our guidance.
Oh, really?
Whether they like it or not.
Oh, exactly.
Thank you.
They'll take it. Yeah. Where,
yes.
where did they put it?
I'll tell them where to put it if we have another incident like we did 7 months ago.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. I ripped several new rosy red rectums after that one.
Well.
Okay. So, Mr. Cole, principal of Housing Tools. The floor is yours.
All right. Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and it's good to be with you this morning. James Goles with Housing Tools. We have been asked to do a vacation rental analysis.
Mr. Cole, sir, would you pull that closer to you, please?
Oh, sure. Got to get that right out there. So this presentation is for information purposes only. We wanted to summarize the research that we've done and present some recommendations for your consideration, and we'll go over that this morning. Next. So for purposes of this research, we wanted to make sure that we had a clear definition of what is meant by vacation rental. So we're using the definition that's in the county code, which is a single or two-family dwelling which is rented for periods of not more than 30 consecutive days to transient occupants. So the purpose of this analysis is to analyze the vacation rental market in relation to the overall rental market in unincorporated Siskiyou County. Review Siskiyou County's current vacation rental ordinance. Review case studies for the regulation of vacation rentals, and recommend revisions to the current vacation rental ordinance. So when we did our gathering of data and analysis, we divided the county up into various regions. They kind of represent different markets within the county. And that helped us with our analysis and identifying maybe where there's concentrations of vacation rentals and so on. So the Dunsmuir, Mount Shasta area is, or that's the unincorporated areas around Dunsmuir, Mount Shasta, Azalea, Upton along the I-5 corridor, and McLeod, which is the areas in and around McLeod. Scott Valley, Fort Jones are the unincorporated areas along State Highway 3. Klamath River, North Wairika, Happy Camp, Saya Valley, along Highway 96, Lake Shastina, and then Doris Tule Lake, Tule Lake, and that's up around those incorporated areas with the unincorporated areas surrounding them. So we conducted searches on Airbnb in Verbo from March 16th to the 24th, 2022, for stay dates of July 1 to 8 of 2022 and January 23 to 30 of 2023. We looked at occupancy of two adults and also two adults and three children to look at a variety of sizes of rentals. And this is the data that we gathered, 151 total. And you'll see that most of them are in the Dunsmuir, Mount Shasta area, as well as McLeod. 48% of listings were in Dunsmuir, Mount Shasta, 29% in McLeod. So a little over three quarters of the listings were in the Dunsmuir, Mount Shasta, and McLeod areas.
Excuse me, Mr. Cole. Did you say Airbnbs too?
Yes, most of these are Airbnbs. We looked at Airbnb and Vrbo.
Okay.
Those are the primary
listing.
So the ones that are listed are permitted?
Or well, not? We'll go over that. These are what we found on our internet searches, but I'll also go over the number of current permits there are in the county, which is a little bit less, which is interesting.
What? I don't mean this. In the rep, but we get very few requests for Airbnb. Most of ours is vacation rentals.
No, it's there. It falls under the same umbrella.
I know. Airbnb traditionally is just renting one room in a house, correct?
No, the Airbnb includes houses. Actually, most of them are renting entire houses, but it could include a room within the house.
So
it covers the gamut.
Are they just two different associations? Is that it?
No, these are, so Airbnb is a search engine where the owners of the properties list and advertise their rentals.
Okay.
And so Airbnb has a whole variety from bedrooms to large houses listed, and then also Vrbo, similar platform, they'll list
so it's just
a wide variety.
Two different accesses.
It's just, yeah, whichever...
Okay.
Whichever listing the owner chooses to use to advertise and market
okay.
their property. So we looked at the overall averages for the type of property, the rent, And this is what we found, you know, average bedrooms of 2.6, bathrooms 2.7. The weekly rent averages $1,994. Weekly rent per bedroom is $842. And if you calculate that out to a monthly rent for comparison to long-term rentals, it's average monthly rate of $8,410. And then you see the rent per bedroom. So here's a chart that just shows the range. As you can see, the larger houses rent for quite a bit more, at least on an overall rental basis. The rent per bedroom, you know, is more similar among the different unit sizes. But, you know, if you calculate this out on a monthly rent, you know, four, five, six bedrooms are significantly more. And if you look at the rent by region, you'd see that the Dunsmuir, Mount Shasta, and McLeod areas are the highest rent regions, followed by Lake Shastina. And then, as you see, there's quite a variation throughout the county, whereas Klamath River, North Wairika, Doris Tule Lake are much less expensive than the southern part of the county.
So, quick question. The your arrival at the numbers on this table here, does the frequency of occupancy impact your number, or is it strictly number of listings and their average rental cost?
Yeah, it's their average rental cost. And it is not, we did not take any assumptions of percent of year that they're rented. We're
okay.
Just based on their listing,
okay.
Their average on a weekly basis, and then that multiplied by 52 for 52 weeks, and then divide by 12 to arrive at a monthly
okay.
basis. That's what we're showing here.
Okay, thank you.
So these are monthly charges?
Yeah, so this they're rented by the week, but for purposes of comparing with long-term rentals, we just wanted to look at on a monthly basis what are these rates. And so like I said, they'll list for a week. If you multiply that by 52 weeks, which is the number of weeks in the year, and then divide that by 12, then you'll get these monthly rates.
So pretty comparable into a hotel room. Just judging by what.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at it per night.
Right.
Yeah, to compare to hotels. But, yeah.
That just seems like, when I first saw that, wow.
Yeah.
I wonder if everybody wants a vacation rental.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite striking when you look at
the
rates.
These are all unincorporated areas, correct?
Correct.
Correct, yes. We only surveyed in unincorporated areas. You know, like Dunsmuir, Mount Shasta, we're looking at unincorporated areas around those incorporated cities and so on. Yeah. Of course, McLeod is unincorporated, so that includes the town as well as surrounding areas. As the same with Lake Shastina, but all unincorporated.
That falls right in line with, i.e., Scottsdale,
yep.
Where you get all the snowbirds go down there and they'll rent a home for 4 or 5 months, and that's kind of the price they pay. And I'm going, well, you've got all the amenities and all the entertainment attractions and everything of living in the desert in wintertime, as opposed to here. Wow.
All right, next. So, for a comparison purposes, we looked at the overall market rent. And so this data comes from Moody's Analytics Reese reports. These reports take rental data across entire regions. Now, they don't have data available for Siskiyou County specifically. So we looked at the Redding area, which is Shasta County, as well as the Medford Klamath Falls area, which is Jackson County, including Medford and Ashland, and Klamath County, which includes Klamath Falls. And we looked at the average asking rent over the last 5 years. And then we also took the average between the two, which is that gray line in the middle, that's the combined average. Kind of arrive at a kind of approximate asking rent for this region. And you'll see that, you know, that combined average increased from 793 per month to 896 per month over those 5 years. There's more of a difference between the Redding region and the Medford Klamath Falls starting in 2017, but there's been some convergence of the rents here in the most recent year. This is looking at the vacancy rates, again, using the Moody Analytics Reese reports. And you know, you'll see that the vacancy rates are around 2% over the last 5 years. That's extremely low compared to historical records. Typically, at what's considered a healthy rental market would be around 5%. This is much lower, so it makes it much more difficult to find an available unit when you're looking at rental rates of this, you know, around 2%.
Now, this rental, when you're talking rentals here, you're still talking short-term rentals.
No, these last two slides are the overall rental market.
Okay, so yeah. We've changed from vacation rental to
everything. Right, that
rental.
Last slide where we're looking at rents from 793.
That's what I thought it was, so I wanted to be sure.
Yeah, up to 896, that's the long-term rents.
Per
rentals,
month.
Yeah, throughout the region.
Per month.
Per month,
okay.
Right. And I'll have a slide later that compares vacation rentals monthly basis to long-term rentals. This is, again, the long-term overall rental market, average asking rents per month by unit type. And the gray there is the combined average, where we're looking approximately this region, what we're looking at from, you know, around $600 per studio up to $1,100 for a three-bedroom. On average. So here is the comparison of the overall rental market. So you'll see on the top row, vacation rentals, and then long-term rentals, and then the difference. Again, vacation rentals rent by the week, but we calculated on a monthly basis what those rental rates are, total and by bedroom. And then we compared that to the long-term rental rates. And you'll see, you know, there's quite a difference between the two, you know, from $4,477 for one bedroom to $6,758 for a three bedroom. Overall, you know, the vacation rentals rates is almost eight times the average asking rent for the long-term rentals. So looking at numbers overall, there are an estimated 2,836 rental units throughout the unincorporated county, including vacation rentals, and that's using U.S. Census data. Based on our searches, there's an estimated 151 vacation rentals. That is 5.3% of all the rental units. The estimated vacant rental units are 56, so that's an estimated 2%. So it's interesting to note that even though it appears that there are not a lot of vacation rentals in terms of total numbers, it is a 5.3% of all rental units, and when compared to vacant rental units, it's still almost three times the number of vacant rental units. So if all of the vacation rentals were converted to long-term leases, that would increase the vacancy rate from 2% to 7.3%, assuming all those vacation rentals were vacant at that time. Just as a point of comparison.
Mr. Cole, you mentioned census. Was that the last census?
So we used 2019. There are 2020 numbers. I did take a look at that. It has not changed very much at all between those 2 years. But yeah, we're using the American Community Survey from the census. So just to summarize the current ordinance that you have here in the county, parcel must be 2.5 acres or larger. Occupancy limited to a maximum of 10 persons. Maximum rental period is 30 consecutive days. There are parking space requirements and must be managed by a county resident or professional management firm located in the county with 24-hour availability. Must meet uniform housing code and state and local water and sewage disposal regulations. The use permit is reviewed by the various county departments as well as CAL FIRE. And there's also a due diligence review of the permit request by the Sheriff's Department, Code Enforcement, and Public Works. So currently on record, there are 131 use permits for vacation rentals that have been approved since 2001. There are 13 applications currently pending conditions of approval. Since the adoption of the updated ordinance on September 3rd of last year, 10 applications have been submitted, 2 have been approved, and 8 are pending Planning Commission review. So for comparison purposes and to look at what's being done in other communities, we looked at some case studies. We looked at Sonoma County, Placer County, and City of South Lake Tahoe, where they have location limitations on vacation rentals. So in Sonoma County, they prohibit new vacation rental permits in certain areas. In Placer County, they have a cap on the number of vacation rental permits in eastern Placer County, areas that are more touristed near Lake Tahoe there on the west side of Lake Tahoe. And then in the city of South Lake Tahoe, they prohibit new vacation rental permits in residential zoned areas. And then they limit issuance of new permits in what they call the tourist core, which is a commercial and recreation zoned areas outside of recreation areas.
Are those reasons usually because there's just no rental available for a total yearly occupancy? Is that the reason why?
Yeah. What in researching these ordinances, that's a major driver of why they're putting these prohibitions and limitations in place, because it affects the rental market and what's available for people that are working in the area, particularly in these vacation destinations. They're having trouble finding housing for their workers that are servicing those businesses. Also, there can sometimes be some negative impacts on surrounding neighborhoods from use of vacation rental, and that's why there's various rules that are put in place, or there's some impacts. Maybe if there's a concentration in a residential neighborhood where people that have been living there for a long time are trying to live next to more of a transient occupancy. So those are some of the factors that they're considering when they're putting in place these ordinances. The city of San Diego has an overall cap, which is at 1% of the city's housing stock, but it does not, that applies to the entire area except for the Mission Beach area, which is a high concentration of vacation rentals already next to the beach, where the cap there is 30% of total units. So 1% across the city and 30% in that Mission Beach area. Then there is a lodger's tax in the city of Santa Fe, New Mexico, which we thought was notable in that it's a tax that's passed on to the renters. They pay it per night stayed, and that applies to vacation rentals in residential areas. It does not apply to vacation rentals in commercially zoned areas.
So does the city get the tax, or is it divided between the city and the county?
That lodger's tax goes directly to the city in that case, but it could be, it depends on the level of government. It could be, you know, for example, in Siskiyou County, unincorporated county, it could be taxed and go to the county.
Okay.
So these are some menu of policy options that we've looked at. Kind of comes in these two different categories, but you know, there are options for putting a cap on the number of permits. So that could be a total number of permits countywide, or caps on number of permits in certain locations, parts of the county. And then there are tax options to fund affordable housing production. You asked about the impact on affordable housing. Due to the impacts on the availability of housing stock and housing available, particularly for workers in an area, there are options to levy a tax or a fee to fund affordable housing production. So different options there are a dedication of a portion of the transient occupancy tax, or a one-time impact fee charged at the time of use permit is issued, or the lodger's tax assessed as a per night charge to guests. So I'm going to go over some recommendations. These are, you know, for your consideration and in conversation at this point. They could be taken all together as a package or individually. But the first of these is to remove the requirement that vacation rentals must be located on properties that are 2.5 acres or larger in size. The reason for that would be if you're replacing it with other regulations, then it may not be necessary to continue this, or you may decide to continue it. But
give me your reasons again why you're recommending that.
Well, I think it'll become evident as I go through the other recommendations, but we believe that putting in place the other recommended regulations would address some of the issues,
okay.
Some of the concerns and reasons why this kind of moratorium was put in place last year. But again, it's up to you how you should decide, you know, whether you want to layer this on top of others, or you may decide to just keep the ordinance as it is. The first here is a proposed cap on new permits. So this basically ties the number of permits allowed to the number of vacancies, so rental vacancies, so that the number of vacation rental permits could not be more than two times the estimated number of rental vacancies in the county. As long as that were the case, then no new permits would be issued. So for example, right now, if there are 131 vacation rental permits and 51 vacancies, the vacancies would need to get up to at least 66 to really allow any new permits. This would allow renewals of currently existing permits, but it would not allow any new ones, as long as, you know, the number of permits is less than two times the number of vacancies. The other recommendation is a moratorium on new permits in the unincorporated areas around Dunsmuir, Mount Shasta, and McLeod. There, as we found, that there's quite a concentration, and there's also some affordability issues and challenges for workers in those areas to find long-term rentals. The market dynamics in this region could be monitored regularly to determine whether that moratorium should be lifted. And then this recommendation is to implement a licensing and monitoring program. The purpose of this is really to be able to ensure that the rentals are following all the rules and in compliance with the use permits, and mitigating issues that could be caused with impacts to surrounding areas and neighborhoods. But it would be funded by an annual fee of around $500 to renew the license, and then would fund an annual inspection to ensure compliance.
Are they concerned about going under the radar if you impose that fee?
That could be a consideration, yes. But in other areas that we've looked at where they have such a fee, it helps fund the county's efforts to, you know, ensure compliance with the conditions and, again, mitigate some issues that may arise where they're not in compliance or causing problems for the surrounding community.
Do motels have to pay a annual fee for anything that you're aware of in this county?
No, although they do have certain regulations and code requirements that vacation rentals don't.
I'm aware of that.
And so, you know, hotel operators
specifically to that,
but not this specific.
Thank
fee.
You.
Yeah. But certainly, yeah, there's different regulations and requirements around hotels than vacation rentals. And then the last recommendation is the lodger's tax, which would be a $20 per night flat fee that would be paid by vacation rental guests to the vacation rental owner. Those funds would go to the county to provide funds for the development of affordable housing. And we estimated that that would generate about $550,000 annually to fund an estimated 20 to 40 affordable units every 2 to 3 years. So that would help address some of those affordability issues that we found across the county. As we've also done work on the housing element update, we have found, you know, an acute need for affordable rentals.
So $20 a night per occupant would go to the county,
right?
How's that over and above the TOT?
Yes, yeah, that would be additional. But it would be collected in a similar way to how the TOT is collected.
Has other communities imposed that, that you know?
Yeah, one of those case studies we looked into was Santa Fe that we noted. There are a few others as well.
Is there any rural communities that have done this? You know?
We can look into that. It's interesting, it's been implemented in New Mexico by some communities in New Mexico, not as much in California, but we can look further into it if that is something.
It seems to
you know,
be pretty
interesting.
That's a pretty stiff fee to put on rural. And I don't know that that's going to generate that much. That much revenue, you calculated what, 500,000?
What's the formula you used assessing that $20 per night to come up with 500,000?
We used the number of vacation rentals that we'd surveyed. We found that they are on average about half of the year leased, kind of all the days throughout the year. So we calculated, you know, those rentals leased half of the year at that, you know, per night fee, generate about $550,000.
Where does the TOT tax go? General fund?
10%. Yeah, general fund.
Yeah.
What? You said?
That was just straight 180 days. Yeah, it's 500K.
So, yeah, were there any questions, comments?
When they imposed 2.5 acres, that was the supervisors that did that, right?
What's that? It came about because of what was going on down in Mount Shasta. Around the Highland subdivision, there were some people who objected to a specific one rental house right on the road, but then it came countywide.
It was first just their influence, right?
Okay, the thing that frustrated me about the situation we're talking about, all three of us here,
the subdivision is stacked in there like cordwood. They're 0.4 to 0.6 acres in that subdivision.
Can we pause for a minute, just a second?
Oh.
Do you want me to turn off the recording?
I don't know what just happened.
Should I turn off the recording?
No. Okay, go ahead.
So, they're stacked in there like cordwood, and the 2.5 acre minimum is supposed to be imposed in there? How can you do that?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Okay, there's a subdivision called Holiday Court down by the reservoir in Mount Chester.
Okay.
About 2 years ago, we had a property owner come before us, wanted to turn his home into a vacation rental. Okay. Properties in that subdivision, and I looked it up, are 0.4 to 0.6 acres. They're stacked in there like cordwood. But because there was a 2.5 acre minimum in the county, that man could not use his home as a vacation rental.
Right. I think that's the particular vacation rental that we actually went back to the board for direction, because they had never codified their recommendation, and they determined that they wanted to codify it, and that was the time that it was codified for the sphere of influence for the city of Mount Shasta.
Yeah, and the sphere of influence, right? Thank you.
So it's only in there, it's not countywide?
So at that time, we made it so that it was a sphere of influence for the city of Mount Shasta. However, last year that got expanded to include the entire county, unincorporated county.
So I had asked you earlier about looking on the list of all these vacation rentals on websites, and I asked you how many you found total. How many are licensed and how many are permitted and how many are not permitted?
Yeah, so we found 151.
Right.
There are 131 permits on the county's records right now. So it's close, but not exact.
And you did that on one site?
We did that on two different sites we searched for two different weeks over a 1 week period. And looking at two different types of occupancy for each search. So we tried to be as comprehensive as we could. We looked at weeks that are high vacation rental weeks, but are different times of the year, one winter, one summer.
Because that's a vast improvement of what it used to be.
Yeah.
It used to be about 50-50.
I noticed several years ago, maybe a year ago, out where Blair lives, they had the Lavender Farm, and they converted that barn into a beautiful vacation rental. It was advertised a vacation rental. Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
It was $700.
I thought they just closed it up.
Huh?
I thought they just closed it up.
Well, I don't know what happened to it. They spent a tremendous amount of money.
And I think they ended up closing
it. And it was $700 a night or something for a retreat. And I don't know, is it off? Was it ever brought forward to a vacation rental?
I don't believe that if there was an illegal use of that property that it ever came on our radar. I don't recall ever seeing a code enforcement complaint for it.
I remember seeing it on VRBO, but then it was gone.
There's more construction up there.
Huh?
There's more construction up there.
Well, anyway.
Okay, so we're going to bring this back. Staff report. Is the staff report completed? Is just Mr. Cole giving us his report, or do we have additional input from Haley or Rachel?
There was a staff report that just contained in the staff report package, but it basically just highlighted and summarized this study. So in October, there will be recommendations brought forth to the commission based on the discussion today, and then there would be further discussion and action on that in October.
Okay, so you are looking for questions from us,
mm-hmm.
recommendations from us, before you come back in October.
Correct.
Okay. So, commissioners, are there questions that any of you would like staff to address before we see this in October? Or additions from the commission that you would like to see looked at?
Well, I would like to review that 2.5.
Yes, sir.
Again, I would think that whether it's going to do any have any survey purpose when it gets to the Board of Supervisors, I don't know.
In what fashion? Keep it in place?
Remove it.
Okay, well, that's the recommendation that's been made, is to remove it. So you're supporting that? Okay, okay.
I agree with that. One of the things, too, they talk about enforcement, they talk about noise, they talk about... That happens in any neighborhood. It doesn't. If it's a vacation rental, oh, you have an avenue to call law enforcement and file a complaint. But, and I will stand corrected here, but didn't we contact the sheriff's office when this first came down about how many complaints they had from vacation rental, and it was minimal, was it not? Or nothing?
Staff contact sheriff department
right.
for reports on all projects which come before us now.
I think they did, but this was brought up and they didn't have any complaints at that time, is that?
We've had some without.
Yeah, but they were minimal, is that correct? Yes, okay.
I think in other communities, and you tell us that, Mr. Cole, right, vacation rentals in metropolitan areas have really gotten out of hand in some cases, and it's been kind of a spring break event, is it not?
Yeah, it really varies, but it's definitely been a consistent concern from communities, especially if there is a concentration of them and the negative impacts on the surrounding residents. But it is location specific, depending on the concentration of rentals.
And in the staff report here that was in our packet, it says, makes an unfair competition with hotels and B&Bs. They're all the same thing. How can they be unfair? So if you have two motels, is one unfair to the other?
Yeah, I think there we're getting the perspective that it's a much lower cost of entry to the business to do a vacation rental, where hotels and motels are highly regulated with the standards they have to follow, their safety protocols and staffing. Of course, they have to have on-site 24-hour staff and so on. So that's what's being referred to there. But it is.
Vacation rentals, they have to have somebody. If it's listed, it has to have somebody available 24/7.
But not on site.
That's right. But close.
Hotel has to be on site.
Okay.
But you're still paying them.
That's okay. When you pay a fee, so be it.
Well, I get the point here, because if I own a hotel, I have got to pay to have somebody on that site 24 hours a day.
Right.
I'm paying payroll taxes and I'm paying labor.
Right.
Now.
But that's your choice. As a motel.
With a vacation rental, it's a hell of a lot cheaper to pay $100 a month to some entity to be available via phone call versus $200-$400 a day paying for somebody to be on site. That's the comparison I believe Mr. Cole's making, and I get that. It's a lot cheaper to operate a vacation.
That's fine, but the word unfair is not a good one, in my opinion. That's all I have at this point.
So, Blair, did you have anything before? I've got a couple questions for Mr. Cole.
Yeah, I want to re-explore the sphere of influence. The city of Mount Shasta seems to be the only one that pushes that. And how far out does that go? All the way to Irica? How do you...
The sphere of influence...
It seems rather subjective coming from them.
So the sphere of influence for the city of Mount Shasta is based off of the potential expansion of their septic system, and it is quite large. It pretty much goes north all the way to the city limits of Weed. Actually, it goes right up to the edge of what their sphere of influence is.
Yeah.
And it goes really far south as well, all the way to, I believe, the Mott Airport is how far south it goes. It's a really, really large sphere of influence.
So how come the city of Weed doesn't institute the same thing against the city of Mount Shasta?
That would be a question for the city of Weed. I don't know.
Wow.
That's a term that's used in the industry is...
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Is that the term, the sphere of influence, is a term that's used in the industry because the sewer capacity extends that far? Is that what you're saying?
Sewer and water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so sphere of influences are something that's regulated by LAFCO, which coincidentally Haley and I are also LAFCO staff, but the sphere of influence is based off of what their potential to serve the surrounding unincorporated community is with their utilities and other services that they offer. I mean, it could be garbage, it could be police, it could be fire.
On capacity then, it's
and what it's just dependent on the individual city's services and what their capacity is. So those can change if they increase capacity. They can ask to modify their sphere of influence. The LAFCO, we do every 5 years a municipal service review and sphere of influence update to all of the cities in Siskiyou County. The most recent one was, I believe, like a year and a half ago. There was no expansion of any of the spheres of influences for any of the cities in Siskiyou County at that time.
It was about 9 years ago, Aetna increased theirs to go to the north of Johnson Creek, where the RV site got put in, and also went to the east just across Aetna Creek up to where Dr. Chisholm used to have her practice. But that was just kind of like a extended 300 yards east and north. And I think that was the last one we saw with an increase.
So you're saying that the city of Mount Shasta is contemplating running sewer and water all the way to the south?
No, they have the potential.
They have the potential?
Mm-hmm. The potential. It's based off of the potential. It's not on what their actual current plans are. They could potentially expand. Because in order to annex property, in order for a city to annex into the county, it has to be within the sphere of influence. So if they want to expand an area, the first thing they have to check for is to make sure it's within their sphere of influence. And if it is, then they can proceed with applying for the annexation. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean they will, but
it
has
the potential. It seems rather perplexing to me that on the one hand you want to build in the capacity to expand, yet when opportunities come to expand, they fight a tooth and nail.
The state of California is going to be out there pushing communities to expand their housing element.
Well, I'm not arguing. It just seems...
No, but I mean, you just wait with
it. It's an oxymoron here to me. Okay, I'm
so fine. Mr. Cole, are you done, Mr. Hart?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Mr. Cole, I've got a question for you. Do you have the ability to discover of the existing, and I believe you said currently in Siskiyou County, there are 2,836 rental units. So that's how many, according to the 19 census, structures that are either being rented, in the act of being rented, or available to rent.
Correct.
That includes long-term and short-term.
Right.
It's simply a structure to rent.
Right.
Of those 2,836, do you have the ability to discover how many of those are being occupied by individuals that are in the process of being evicted?
Off the top of my head, no.
Is that possible? Because, and this is why I bring this up. I am familiar personally with seven instances of structures with occupants that the landowner cannot get out, and three of those seven, they've been trying to evict them now for 5 or more years. And due to federal and state idiocy, the tenants have more rights than the landowner. And it is no surprise to me why individuals are pulling potential long-term rentals off the market and going vacation rental, because with the 30 or fewer days, because because they're done with the headaches of getting rid of bad renters. That it, and I guess the other question I would have for you, how many are under eviction process, is how many of those 2,836 structures have been vacant and not rented over the course of the last 2 to 3 years? Because I know about a half dozen of those, when I got our last renter out, we didn't bring anybody back in. I said, the hell with it, because the neighbors having issues. We aren't long-term renting anymore. And so is there a way to tell how many of those 2,800 are actively in process of or seeking renters? How many are in process of eviction, and how many of them have not been rented over the last 2 to 3 years?
Sheriff's Department could tell you that, couldn't
it? I suppose we could look at court records for the evictions data point. As far as units vacant over 3 years, that would be challenging. I don't know of any data source that tracks that.
Okay.
Vacancy rate's only 2%, so which is extremely low. But it, you know, as far as evictions, we may be able to get some data on that. If it's been filed.
Okay. Because I understand the challenge with the low percent vacancy. I get that. Our county is short affordable housing for individuals working in the county. We need to have that available or the businesses won't survive. Completely get that. Have, in your knowledge, have any counties or cities within the housing element come up with ordinance or regulatory language which gives more flexibility and power to the landowner in the process of evictions that could or would supersede imposed get out of jail free squatter protection coming from the state that gives the county more ability to protect the landowner to get rid of bad tenants and bring in good tenants? Are you familiar with any type of language that counties or cities may have successfully incorporated into their housing elements?
No, I'm not. And the focus that the evictions, landlord tenant relations to that detail was not the focus of our study. I'm not aware of, to my knowledge, I'm not aware of communities that have expanded flexibility for landlords in terms of eviction. You know, there are state and federal laws that restrict that quite a bit, but. So I think largely local governments don't have a lot of leverage there, but honestly, I haven't really looked into that in any kind of depth.
It's good because our county is in a catch-22. We need more housing, affordable for workers and employees, for businesses, but at the same time, due to the state we live in, people are hesitant to do long-term rentals anymore. And so until we're able to address and be able to quickly evict bad tenants, this problem isn't going to be resolved, in my mind. We're almost at an impasse. You can run down the list. Renters were given 14 months where they didn't have to pay rent to the landlord.
It was COVID?
Yeah, and it's still in place in California. Excuse me, but you've got somebody who owns property still has to pay the taxes.
That's it.
They still have to do the upkeep on the structure, and they're not getting paid rent. You have cases where people have not paid rent, and they're protected as squatters. Been in there for 6 years. Sheriff County victim, you have mental health issues in the facility, the thing ought to be condemned, but then the landlord or the landowner is the one responsible for condemning it, but you can't get them out to condemn it. It's like we're stuck in a pickle here, especially being a lower income county. We're in a pickle.
Can the health department evict
you? No. They're protected.
Going down
unless they self-commit to a facility, they cannot be removed.
I meant the physical health of the property.
Nope.
Nope. Well, the county can say it's not, can condemn it, but how do you get rid of the people that are there? There's no legal mechanism currently in the state of California to physically remove bad tenants.
Right across the street from my house, there's a rental. There's a beehive that's been there 3 years with no bees. There's three above ground planting boxes with nothing in them. The yard hasn't been mowed in I don't know how long. It looks like a hay thing. But she pays her rent and she pays her city things. So she's there. But that's her property. I don't like it. But going down what Jeff said, prior to that, there was a person in there. It took them 14 months to get them out of there. They didn't have to pay their electric bill. They didn't have to pay their, and they couldn't turn it off because they had kids in the house. They didn't pay their city services and they didn't pay the rent. And when they did leave, all that debt was there. None of that was collectible. So, going back to the vacation versus year to year or month to month, that's something that needs to be looked at.
So based on your numbers and the recommendation that you threw up there on our potential options, you're looking at essentially a 2-to-1 ratio. It would freeze until it became a 1.9-to-1. And then would you envision there'd be a waiting list, first come, first serve, they get in a holding pattern. If the percentages change, total, if a new rental comes available, drops to 1.918, okay, we take the first one at the top of the list, see if they pass or not. And that's how you foresee the language moving
that's,
forward.
That's basically the concept is.
And now that's countywide, not by region. That's countywide.
That's countywide. Yeah. Once that ratio is 1.99 or less, then you would take applications off that waiting list to consider for new permits.
Okay. And so here's what information you could bring back to us. You're proposing this as overlaying full county. What would that look like by the regions, which you broke it down? So you had 6-7 regions, Klamath, Happy Camp,
Redding.
Scott Valley, Redding's not in Siskiyou County. Scott Valley, the Mount Shasta, Dunsmuir stretch, Tule Lake, and then did you have Doris separate?
Doris and Tule Lake were in the same region.
We're in the same, okay. But if you were to break those out by those regions, what does the ratio look like? I'm presuming McLeod, Mount Shasta to Dunsmuir would be a permanent freeze probably from here until eternity, until the economy changes, that the others would have room for potential additions.
That's something we could look at. As we found, there's quite a difference in the number and concentration of vacation rentals by region. So we could look at that as a modified proposal for this type of freeze, number of permits compared to vacancies by region.
So you're going to come back with your findings and then we'll vote on that to pass it on? Is that what's going to happen?
They're going to come back with a proposal.
Proposal. And we get to beat it up.
And then we get it on.
why would you freeze it at all, just for what you just laid out here about trying to evict problem renters? If I had a rental, and if I had the opportunity to short vacation term rental,
absolutely,
where you could get rid of them, you're going to go down that road. Why would you restrict somebody's investment? I don't know why anybody in the world would do a long-term rental. The state of California.
Right now, you're nuts if you do.
You're crazy to do it. And yet, we have a need for
vacation rentals.
We have a need for long-term rentals.
Housing for people who can't afford to buy a place,
yep,
but you can't put the landowner into a pickle where he's forced to have to rent it there.
It's a catch-22, just like with you relating to Jeff. You know, you got those people in, you can't get them out.
Those eight people that are the eight applications you have now.
13.
Huh?
13.
No, it was eight. Right?
13 pending.
Anyway, the number. Are those, what's the length of time do you think it would take to?
I'm sorry, say that again?
How many people do you have pending applications?
What's the number?
It was the one right after you had the 2836 units, the 151 vacation, 56 vacants, 131 use permits with 13 pending.
Yeah. Anyway.
That's right. Yeah, so we have, since that 2.5 acre was countywide requirement, there were 10 applications submitted since then. 2 have been approved by the Planning Commission and 8 are pending. Currently, there are 13 applications overall that are pending their conditions of approval, which means that you guys have approved them, but they haven't met all of their conditions of approval.
Oh, okay. That's what that pending is.
Okay, so how long will it take those 8 to get approved? Would you just as they do?
So it depends on which one it is. We have some people who they applied, but they have septic issues that they need to figure out. So that could be months before they fix their septic system. And others, they have to do some remodeling because they did a building inspection and they didn't pass. And they're like, well, if I'm going to be, you know, messing around with the house, I might as well do this other project that I've been putting off. So we really don't have control on when pending.
It's not.
Right now, we're bringing you everything that's ready as far as vacation rentals, and there's nothing that's currently ready.
Yeah. So a number of those pending have already been before us. We've approved, but they are based on the conditions in the use permit, have not met all those conditions yet to open up for business.
So there's two different categories. There are 131 that you guys have seen and approved. 13 of those have conditions of approval.
Okay.
Since
13 of that 131.
Yeah. Oh. So was that 13 included in the 131?
No.
No. Okay. So there are 131 that are approved and they have their use permit issued. There are 13 more that you guys have approved, but we have not issued their use permit.
So that's 144 have gone through this process.
Right.
Okay.
And then we have 8 just since the moratorium, the countywide 2.5 acre moratorium went in, that they're not ready to come to you. There are more actually than that are pending because we had a big surge of people trying to get their applications in prior to that 2.5 acre moratorium. So we had probably about at least 10 just within the week prior to the moratorium going into effect. Some of those thought that maybe they would at some point want to get a vacation rental use permit, so they applied so that they wouldn't lose the opportunity, not knowing what is going to happen in the future, of course. And so of those, the ones that we told you about are only the ones since that moratorium that met that 2.5 acre minimum parcel size. There are more that are pending that who knows what's going to happen with those.
Yeah.
We're gradually going through them and saying, hey, if you're not ready in the next X number of days, we're canceling your project altogether because we don't want them pending for years and years.
We're trying
to clean those up.
We got the revenue generated from the tax collector a couple of years ago. They provided us with the revenue that VRBOs generated?
Are you talking about the TOT?
TOT. VRBO TOT. Do you remember, is that going to be a consideration to pass on to the Board of Supervisors? You know?
Are you asking if it's under consideration to increase the TOT?
No. Will they provide that information to the Board of Supervisors, or to us?
It's something,
as to the revenue is generated by the VRBO.
It's something that we can get from the Treasurer Tax Collector, I believe, as we've done that in the past.
Yeah.
I think we actually tried.
We did look at that in the report and kind of compared that to the lodger's tax on how much revenue would be generated. Such it was much less than what would be generated by the lodger's tax. But yeah,
I remember, that
information is available.
40,000 or something.
Yeah, I mean that was we looked at a concept of dedicating a portion of the TOT to affordable housing production. As far as the overall TOT tax generated, we could provide that information.
I'd like to see that for October. TOT off of vacation rentals. And I would also like to see what our countywide TOT is for hotel motel. To do a kind of a comparison.
Question, Rachel. Of the 13 that are already been approved, but they haven't met the conditions, do you guys check websites to see if they're operating anyway?
We, our code enforcement has actually been really good the past few years. We have some pretty stable people there, and they do periodically check and see what rentals are listed. And since I've been here, we started requiring that they put their use permit number on any advertisements. So we know if they have a use permit number, that means that it actually got issued.
Right.
And so we have been better at monitoring. We don't have a specific time frame for checking the ones that have not been issued. We just have code enforcement just periodically checks it when we have a few extra minutes.
So what's the protocol going forward if you catch someone?
We tell them to take it down.
So do they lose that approved use permit?
No. In order to have an approval by you guys rescinded, I believe, and Bill can probably clarify this, I believe that an approved use permit has to be rescinded by the board after it first comes to you guys. But Bill, can you clarify that?
Yeah, no, that's correct. If staff felt a permit needed to be revoked, it comes to the Planning Commission for recommendation, and it goes to the board for action.
That TOT tax for motel hotel is not going to be a very big figure because it's in the unincorporated area, which is very few.
No. I'm looking to compare totals because we're looking, the information comparison I'm looking for, it will shed light upon my question.
Which is, you wanted to know the difference between TOT.
TOT collected on vacation rentals.
Right.
Versus TOT collected hotel motel, because we have available the average vacancy of hotel rooms. We know exactly how many rooms are available in Siskiyou County.
My point is that you're not going to get many hotel motel outside of cities. That figure will not come to you.
Why not? If it's in the county, TOT comes to the county coffer, right?
No.
I believe so, but that's really a treasurer tax collector question.
The city of Wairika's TOT tax comes to the city of Wairika.
But doesn't it have to be reported to the county?
Well, it could be, but I don't think
it should be.
It's not their revenue.
No, but it should be reported to the county.
I don't know.
I don't know. I agree with Rachel. I would have to ask.
I know the TOT in Mount Shasta goes to the city, and I don't know if they reported it to the county. I do not know that.
It's public record, but I don't know if they
reported. Okay. I understand your comment and question now.
I mean, you're going to get a very low number if it's just the county's hotel motel compared to...
Gotcha. I was thinking that the county would have a record of TOT collected revenue, whether it's going to municipality or whether it's unincorporated.
I don't know, but I'm just saying.
Okay.
The
the total revenue.
Best you can do, at least for the vacation rental.
Yes, that's a,
definitely would.
Yeah,
like that. Any other?
So back to just a regular rental. The county has no jurisdiction whatsoever. What goes on there? That's just a private contract between the landowner or as a
rentee and rentor.
There you go. So if you go back to the 2.5 acre minimum, you're narrowing the economic opportunity of people who have a smaller parcel to rent a house for the same amount of money, which would then be less TOT to the county. The county would have a potential tax increase by reducing that size. And I understand the conflict of people don't want that around, but wouldn't it be cheaper to stay with the short-term vacation rental as opposed to the amount of money the landowner has to spend, the county has to spend, to try to evict someone who's not paying the rent? There's a whole lot of different things that need to be looked at here about costs to the taxpayers of the county to pursue these policies.
That was reason for my question. Have any counties or cities implemented language within the housing elements,
right,
to give rentors or rentees, landowners, more power back to controlling their own land,
right,
their own property? Because until that issue is solved,
may I make a suggestion? Can we go through the recommendations one by one and get your opinions on them so that way you know what direction we're looking at for what to bring forward to you next time?
And may I also, this is a housekeeping note, we should ask for any sort of comment on this item.
Oh.
If there is any.
Yeah, we've been stuck in the vicious circle of if any, item E, if any commissioners have questions of staff, haven't we? Okay, we'll get out of that whirlpool, open up the public hearing. Anyone from the public?
We got somebody on the line here.
I do have a hand raised online.
Okay.
One moment, please.